Imagine, you've got your AI assistant, and it enthusiastically wishes your coworker a happy birthday, but it does it on your mom's birthday.
Oh man, yeah, that is, well, it's a hilarious but slightly horrifying failure of context.
Right. I mean, we expect our devices to seamlessly track the people in our
Yeah.
lives, but under the hood, even the most advanced systems out there are, often functionally amnesiac.
They really are. They just forget people.
Exactly. So today we're taking a deep dive into why that happens. We've got this fascinating developer diary from an AI system named Mio.
Specifically, it's a post called Part 6, Rebuilding Mio.
Yeah, that's the one. And our mission for you today is to really explore this fundamental problem in artificial intelligence. Like why algorithms struggle so much to remember human beings and the incredibly clever and sometimes really messy engineering required to fix it.
It really is a fascinating architectural problem. I mean, what we're looking at here is a fundamental shift in how machines comprehend relationships. It's not just a quick software patch. It is an evolution from treating a person as like a random string of text in a database to actually treating them as a first-class entity.
Which sounds simple, right? But as we'll see, it's anything but. We're going to look at why standard memory systems just completely break down when you introduce a friend into the conversation.
They shatter.
They really do. So to get there, we have to look at the baseline first. Like, how was this AI originally trying to remember things?
So in earlier versions of Mio, and frankly in many standard AI agents today, memory is stored as flat rows in this massive database table.
Okay, just giant spreadsheets, basically.
Pretty much every time you tell the AI effect, it creates a new row containing the raw text, some basic metadata, and, most importantly, a vector embedding.
Let's actually pause on vector embeddings for a second, just so we are totally clear on the mechanics of that.
Sure. A vector embedding is, well, it's essentially a mathematical translation of meaning. The system takes a sentence and turns it into a set of coordinates in a really high-dimensional mathematical space. Concepts that have similar meanings, they end up clustered close together in that space.
Okay, so if I tell my AI, I love spicy food, that gets turned into a coordinate.
Exactly.
And later, if I ask, hey, what should I have for dinner? The math behind that question lands very close to the spicy food coordinate. The AI grabs it, and boom, I get a recommendation for a Szechuan place.
And that semantic search works beautifully, I mean, flawlessly, for simple preferences or isolated facts.
Oh.
But the developer of Mio quickly realized that human beings completely shatter this model. They used a really specific example of a friend named Zhao Hong.
Right, let's unpack this Xiao Hong scenario because this really clicked for me. Imagine you are chatting with your AI over the course of, say, a few months. Across five totally separate conversations, you mention different things about her. You say she works at Tencent. You mentioned she lives in Shenzhen. Later, you bring up how you two met in college. You mentioned she just got a promotion. And finally, you tell the AI she has been really stressed out lately.
So, under the flat row architecture, those five conversations just become five isolated rows, right? They are scattered seemingly at random across millions of other memories in the database.
But wait, if I ask the AI about her, shouldn't it just use that semantic search to find all the rows?
You would think so.
Yeah, like if the name Xiao Hong is in all of them mathematically, shouldn't they just group together in that vector space?
That is the logical assumption, and honestly, it's exactly why so many developers initially build systems this way. But let's actually test that logic. Say you ask the AI, how is Zha Hong doing lately?
Okay, simple question.
Fundamentally, your question is about recent well-being and mental health. Now consider the memory row that says Zha Hong works at Tencent as an engineer.
Right, that's just a job fact.
Exactly. It's a factual statement about employment. In the landscape of vector space, questions about well-being and facts about corporate employment have near zero semantic overlap.
Oh, wow. I think I see where this is going. It's like imagining vector space as a massive grocery store.
I love that analogy.
So my question about her well-being sends the AI to the pharmacy aisle, right? Because it's about health. But the fact about her job is all the way over in the hardware aisle.
That is a great way to visualize it. The AI is standing in the pharmacy aisle looking for answers. It literally cannot see the hardware aisle.
Even though both items have a giant label on them that says Xiaohong.
Exactly. The math says these two concepts are unrelated, so the distance between them is vast.
So the AI knows the facts, they exist in the database, but it's entirely blind to the connection.
Precisely. This is the vector space paradox. Because of this semantic disconnect, the system's only fallback was to execute what SQL developers call an ILIC query.
And for those of us who don't spend our weekends writing database queries, what does that actually do?
Right, so ILIC is a command for case-insensitive pattern matching. But in practice, across a massive memory table, it acts as a brute force full table scan.
Oh.
Yeah. Going back to your grocery store analogy, it means the AI stops looking at the aisles entirely. Instead, it picks up every single item in the entire store, one by one, checking to see if the word Xiaohong is printed anywhere on the label.
Which sounds incredibly inefficient, like computationally.
It is painfully slow. It's computationally expensive, and it possesses zero actual intelligence or semantic understanding. It's just a literal text sweep.
Okay, so relying on vectors and brute force scans was clearly a dead end. The developer realized they had to completely rethink the data structure. So how do you fundamentally rewire a database to understand a person?
Well, you have to stop treating a person as a recurring word inside a scattered memory and start treating the person as the foundation. The developer introduced a dedicated contacts table.
So she gets her own permanent real estate in the system.
Yes. Xiaohong is no longer just a string of text. She is a distinct permanent row in this new table. And the crucial engineering leap here is how this new row interacts with that massive sea of raw memories we just talked about.
What do they do?
They added a memory IDs column to the contact row.
How does that work? Are they just like copying all the text about her into this one column?
No. Copying data creates messy redundancies. You don't want that. The memory IDs column is an array of UUID's universally unique identifiers.
Okay.
Think of them as direct digital pointers. Every time a raw memory is created that references Xiaohong, the unique ID of that memory is added to her contact array.
Ah, so it's a structural link. It's not semantic at all.
Exactly. When you ask about her now, the AI doesn't do a semantic guess, and it doesn't do a brute force sweep of the grocery store. It does an O of one lookup.
Instant.
Yes, it grabs her specific contact profile, looks at the pointers, and instantly retrieves only the exact memories linked to her.
That structural lookup changes the game completely. But you know what really caught my attention in this developer diary?
What's that?
The attributes column. They didn't just stop at pointing to old memories. They formatted this column using JSONB, which, you know, allows for complex nested data. And what they put inside it is wild.
What's fascinating here is that the AI uses a large language model to actively generate a structured profile of the person based on those memories.
Yes.
Job title, birthday, personality traits, interests, and even a chronological timeline of major life events, all stored neatly in this JSONB format.
It's mimicking human memory synthesis. I mean, we don't just walk around remembering every individual sentence a friend ever said to us.
Right. That would be exhausting.
Over time, we boil down those interactions into a cohesive concept of who they are. The AI is doing the exact same, just mechanically.
It is a profound shift. We are moving from scattered data to consolidated identity.
Now, hold on. Having this structured table is one thing. Populating it live is another. If I'm chatting with my AI and I say Xiaohong is so stressed at work, the AI needs to reply instantly.
Right. Low latency is key.
It can't just pause for 10 seconds to run a database migration and rebuild her psychological profile before answering me.
You have hit on the core operational challenge. How do you build a pipeline that handles this heavy lifting without destroying the user experience? The developer solved this by breaking the process into three distinct cadences.
So it doesn't try to do everything at once.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's break those down because this is where the invisible engineering really shines. What happens first?
The first cadence is extraction. This runs quietly in the background, roughly every 10 messages. A component called the memory accumulator scans the recent conversation buffer.
Okay, so it's looking for facts.
Right, it's hunting for extractable facts.
Yeah.
When it finds one that fits a person-related subtype, like a friend or a coworker, it fires off a function called sync contacts.
And that function creates a new contact if one doesn't exist or updates the existing one.
Correct. And crucially, it grabs the unique UUID of that new memory and appends it to that pointer array we talked about earlier.
Okay, so the AI is just silently sweeping up the raw materials and filing them away every 10 messages. But at this point, the JSON profile hasn't been updated, right? It just knows a new fact exists.
Right. That brings us to the second cadence, which is consolidation. This requires much more compute power, so it only happens every 50 messages.
Makes sense.
The system uses a person consolidator. It looks at a contact, bundles up all those newly linked raw memories, and sends them to the language model.
It basically commands the AI, hey, look at all these new fragments, reread the existing profile, and write me a new updated dossier.
Exactly. But here's the most critical mechanical step in the entire pipeline. Once that beautiful new summary is created, the system deliberately sabotages the original raw memories.
Wait, what?
It drops their importance score down to a floor of 0.05.
Wait, I have to push back on that. If you deliberately drop the score of the raw original memory, aren't you essentially giving the AI localized amnesia? Like, why would you bury the source material?
Because of how retrieval algorithms work, most AI systems use a top K retrieval method.
Okay, what does that mean?
When you ask a question, the algorithm mathematically ranks all the related data and only fetches the top K results, say, the top five most relevant pieces of text. If the raw memories and the clean summary have the same important score, they compete against each other.
Oh, I see. So if I ask, how is she? The system might fetch five disjointed sticky notes from 3 months ago instead of the brand new comprehensive summary that actually contains the answer.
Precisely. By artificially crushing the important score of the fragmented data down to 0.05, the developer ensures those raw pieces fall out of the top K ranking.
That's so clever.
The consolidated profile will always mathematically float to the top.
Which perfectly sets up the third cadence, retrieval. This happens on every single message you send right now in real time.
Yes, every message.
So if the system spots a contact's name in your prompt, it doesn't even bother doing a vector search. It intercepts the prompt, pulls that consolidated JSON dossier, and injects it as a contact card right into the system instructions before the AI even starts typing its reply.
It hands the AI the complete file folder before it has to speak. It is incredibly efficient.
But what if it misses something? Like, if the AI relies strictly on this injected card, couldn't it miss an older, obscure memory that maybe wasn't deemed important enough to make it into the summarized dossier?
That is a very real vulnerability. And it's exactly why the developer implemented two-phase retrieval as a safety net.
Two phases.
Phase one is grabbing the contact card, that instant O of one lookup. But phase two still runs that brute force ILUC fallback we discussed earlier.
So it sweeps the grocery store anyway, just in case.
Just in case. It catches memories that existed before this new contact architecture was built, or, you know, moments where the background extraction simply failed to link a UUD.
Redundancy is good.
And the brilliant part is that as the system runs, it self-improves. Every time the fallback finds a missed memory, the system links it. So over time, that slow fallback fires less and less.
On paper, this is a beautifully orchestrated pipeline. But then we get to my favorite part of the diary, which is the messy reality of code. Because theory is great until it hits the database.
Oh, engineering a system this complex is a total minefield.
Let's talk about the array index bug, because this is the one that caused the AI to give a coworker the mom's birthday. How does a database mix up two entirely different human beings?
Well, it's a classic dangerous trap when working with arrays and dynamic databases. The system was relying on the position of items in an array to map relationships. You have an array of stored memory IDs and an array of the people those IDs belong to.
So position zero in the ID array belongs to position zero in the people array, position one to position one, and so on.
That is the intent. The problem occurs when you mix insert operations and update operations. Imagine the pipeline is processing two memories simultaneously. One memory requires creating a brand new contact and insert. The other memory is just updating an existing contact and EPID date.
And because the database handles those operations at different speeds, the results come back out of order.
Exactly. The list of memory IDs shifted, but the list of people did not. The positions misaligned.
Oh, no.
Suddenly, the memory ID containing your mom's birth date is mapped to the index position of your coworker.
That is terrifying. Mm. And the AI just accepts it as truth because the database says so.
The developer only caught it because they were manually inspecting the logs and realized the profiles looked completely unhinged.
I can imagine.
The fix meant abandoning array positions entirely. You can never trust the index. They had to rewrite the logic to query the database for explicit one-to-one mappings between the content and the ID.
That is a hard lesson in database architecture.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the only headache. I mean, didn't Postgres crash too?
Oh, yeah. Passing empty UUID arrays caused PostgreSQL to throw massive type errors. The developer had to literally split the queries to handle empty states.
Just constant fires. And then there was also a massive issue with character encoding, specifically the CJK bug.
Right.
For context, CJK stands for Chinese, Japanese, and Korean text.
This is a notoriously difficult issue in software engineering.
What exactly was happening here? Why did the AI start corrupting its own memory logs?
It comes down to how computers truncate or shorten text. If a memory string was too long, the system needed to slice it down to create a preview snippet. Standard code often slices text by bytes.
Okay, and an English character generally equals 1 byte.
Right, so if you tell the code to cut it 100 bytes, it cleanly cuts after 100 letters.
Simple enough.
But CJK characters are multi-byte. A single Chinese character might be 3 bytes long. If the 100-byte cutoff lands squarely in the middle of a 3-byte character, the code physically slices the character in half.
Oh, wow. You literally cut the letter in half.
The result is entirely unreadable garbage. The database essentially swallows corrupted data, which then poisons the language model during the consolidation phase.
So how do you fix it? You can't just change the size of the language.
No, you have to change how you slice. The fix required spreading the text string into an array of individual code points first, basically treating each multi-byte character as a single unbreakable unit and then slicing that array. That way, you never sever a character.
That's wild. It is wild to me that we're talking about hyper-advanced AI models that can synthesize human psychology and write poetry, but they will completely self-destruct if you slice a byte in half.
They are very literal machines.
And speaking of self-destructing, we have to mention the consolidator loop bug.
A perfect example of how literal these systems are, yeah.
The AI just kept rereading the exact same memories every 50 messages, generating a new profile, and overwriting it infinitely.
Over and over.
It was just burning through compute credits because the developer forgot to tell it to ignore memories it had already processed. A simple filter like consolidated into INLL fixed it, but it just shows how fragile the logic is.
Which is why the developer dedicated the final section of the diary to the blind spots. Because even with these bugs squashed, creating flawless artificial memory is an unsolved puzzle.
So what are the biggest hurdles left?
Identity matching is a major one. The current retrieval system relies on exact string matching.
So if my friend's name is Xiaohong and I type Xiaohong, it works.
Oh.
But what if I'm typing fast and I call her Honghong?
The AI creates two entirely different people.
Wow.
Yeah. There is currently no fuzzy matching. The database has no contextual awareness that those two names point to the same biological entity.
And the pronoun resolution. This part really highlights the gap between how we think and how the machine searches. If you ask the AI, hey, how is she doing? The memory search completely failed.
Because the search algorithm doesn't know who she is. Now, if you mentioned Xiaohong's name 2 messages ago, her contact card is already sitting inside the system prompt. The language model can read the card and infer who you mean.
It fakes it well.
It fakes it very well. But the underlying search pipeline itself, it is entirely blind to pronouns. If the contact card wasn't already triggered, the model is on its own.
There are also deep architectural issues, like race conditions.
Race conditions are a nightmare in asynchronous programming. Imagine 2 separate background tasks realize a new memory needs to be saved. They both check the database at the exact same millisecond.
Okay.
They both see that the memory isn't there yet.
So they both write it.
Exactly. They race each other, and suddenly you have duplicated data. But honestly, the race conditions, the Postgres text search limitations handling Chinese, those are minor compared to the ticking clock built into this architecture.
Ah, yes. The scaling crisis.
Yeah.
Let's dig into this, because it sounds like a fundamental flaw in the consolidation cadence we talked about earlier.
It's an O of N squared problem. That is a computer science term for quadratic growth.
Break that math down for us, because it's pretty alarming.
Okay, so right now, every 50 messages, the person consolidator gathers all linked memories for a contact and sends them to the LLM to rewrite the profile. If Xiaohong has 50 memories, the AI processes 50 memories. That takes a few seconds.
No problem.
But as the developer laid out, if a user sends 20 messages a day, they accumulate roughly 600 extractable memories a year. In 3 years, that is 1,800 memories.
Right.
Under the current architecture, at year 3, every 50 messages, the system is going to pull all 1,800 memories, feed all of them into the LLM, and ask for a complete rewrite. Because the workload grows quadratically, the system will inevitably choke on its own data.
That's a massive bottleneck.
It will become too slow, the latency will skyrocket, and the API costs will be astronomical.
It is essentially a time bomb. Like, to fix the amnesia today, they'd guarantee the system will crash under its own weight tomorrow.
The developer acknowledges it to their credit. The inevitable solution is incremental consolidation, building a pipeline that only processes the newly added memories and gracefully merges them into the existing profile without rereading the entire history.
But as of this diary entry, that hasn't been built.
Not yet.
It is a remarkable journey. I mean, we started with a database that treated your friends as scattered, disconnected coordinates in vector space.
Right.
And we watched the developer realize that human beings require a completely different architecture. First-class tables, UID pointers, and JSON profiles.
And we saw the sheer amount of invisible engineering required just to make an AI say, oh yeah, your friend Xiaohong at Tencent.
Exactly.
Understanding these pipelines really demystifies the technology. It explains why an AI can seem frighteningly intelligent one moment and completely lost the next. Its understanding is entirely bounded by the structure of its data pipelines.
Which leaves me with a lingering thought for you, the listener. If our AI assistants are slowly building these highly structured, consolidated profiles of the friends and family in our lives, what do those artificial relationships actually look like when they are entirely defined by a JSON schema?
That's a good question.
Can a database ever truly capture the real person? Or is the AI just building a highly filtered, heavily biased reflection of our own relationships based strictly on the fragmented things we happen to complain or brag about in our prompts? Something to mull over the next time you mention a friend to your AI. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the technology behind the curtain, and we'll catch you next time.